This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne!
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Today's episode is going to touch every single one of us. I know it doesn't happen every time. Oh, this is a topic that isn't sort of my thing. But we are talking about something that every one of us sees every day.
Oh, this is intriguing. What problem are we solving today?
How is cloud watching helpful for science?
Oh, now I get it. How is cloud watching helpful for science? Me, instead of just looking at the clouds, there's science that we can learn? Who is our guest today, Jeff?
A whole lot of science we can learn. Today's guest is Jessica Taylor, a physical scientist at NASA's Langley Research Center, and she serves as the principal investigator for the Globe Clouds and My NASA Data Programs.
This is so cool. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we are thrilled to have you here. And yeah, just like Jeff said, you get to study clouds.
I mean, right? Isn't that cool?
I was going to say, yes. Is this what you as a kid always wanted to do? Is just look up at clouds and study them? Or where did this start?
So it started because I grew up outside of Tampa, which is the lightning capital of the world.
It is. Well, I live in Jacksonville, like on the other side, so I know all about lightning.
Right. So Florida's known, yes, right, for all of these thunderstorms, these afternoon thunderstorms that, yes, build. And I loved watching thunderstorms.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I just loved watching thunderstorms, and I thought lightning was just really pretty.
Agreed.
Yes. Yes.
And the different colors that it can have and just how it lights up the sky. And I was fascinated by it. And I was lucky enough to have a teacher in high school suggest I should do some research on it. And
that's awesome.
What I found out was that scientists were still discovering new things about lightning.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And I just thought it was really cool that you could have a job where you were studying and learning about things that were of interest to you.
Yes. Yes. Right.
That's an excellent thing for a teenager to learn.
Yes.
Right? And I like to think that that is basically the definition of what a scientist does, is discovering and learning, nice, about things, yes, in our natural world. And as long as you have that curiosity and you're interested,
exactly,
about it,
right,
that's basically what you do as a scientist. And so that's how it all started. Was I, you know, when I was little, I wanted to be a veterinarian and I wanted to be a dance teacher.
Yes.
And then I wanted to be a sports, okay, therapist.
Oh,
and,
okay,
and that's okay too, right? Like,
yeah, exactly,
you get different things that you like in life. And finally in high school, I landed on this interest of storms.
Wow.
And then learned that the people who study lightning are atmospheric scientists, meteorologists.
Okay, right.
And so looked up what schools offer degree programs in that. And that's really how it happened.
That's fantastic.
So as a teenager, you had the best comeback of any teenager I've ever heard. When you figured out what you wanted to pursue in high school, when your parents looked at you and said, oh, Jessica, you just have your head in the clouds.
I wonder where you're going with this.
Absolutely said, yep, and it turns out I know where I'm going to college.
Yes, I have my head in the clouds, and I hope they stay there forever, right? Like that I get to stay with my head in the clouds.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And you have been able to do that straight through college to now working with NASA, mm-hmm,
Right.
You study clouds. Can you explain a little bit more about what you do now?
Yeah. You know, I think that's such a good point that you could have this interest in clouds when you're younger.
Mm-hmm.
And that it turns out that professional scientists are still studying and researching clouds.
Yes.
Right? It's not just a topic that you learn, maybe have fun in preschool,
right,
designing clouds out of cotton balls. This is something of active study in the scientific field. So yes, I am fortunate enough to work at NASA Langley Research Center. And we are known for a lot of our research in atmospheric sciences.
Right.
And clouds play a huge role in that because clouds,
absolutely.
I mean, we think about clouds, I think, a lot from a weather perspective, right?
Yes.
Sure.
So some clouds produce rain. So we care a lot about that in terms of like what we're going to wear in the day and for other reasons too, not just because what we're going to wear, but that's what impacts me on my day-to-day basis is, okay, what am I going to wear today?
Yeah.
And so we think about clouds in terms of weather, but clouds also have a huge impact on climate.
Yes, they do.
So that's kind of the shift between weather is day-to-day and climate being long-term, right?
Right?
So climate is what you expect. Weather is what you get, right? So we can expect that I'm here in Virginia. I can expect that in the summertime, it is going to be warm.
Yes.
It is going to maybe be muggy. But on any given day, my weather might bring about a little bit of cooler air.
Yes.
Or vice versa, right? Like in the wintertime, I expect it to be cold.
Sure.
And then every once in a while, there's this flash of like nice warm weather in the wintertime. That's one of my little tips of how you kind of think about weather versus climate.
Right, right.
Okay.
So what does the globe system do with globe clouds? What do you do with that?
So that's a great question. So the globe program itself encourages communities, people, students, teachers, citizen scientists to make observations of clouds because they're just so critical to both our understanding of weather, but also our understanding of climate and how they might impact climate. And so it's important to have ground-based measurements because people on the ground have a totally different perspective of clouds like that NASA can see from our vantage point of space. So NASA's known for space. And we use that vantage point of space, though, to look back at the most important planet, our home planet, Earth.
Yes.
So we get beautiful images from space, and we get a lot of data from space. And satellites can see easily the tops of clouds.
Yes.
Right.
But we're here on the ground, and we're looking up at the clouds. And so we have a different vantage point. We're looking from ground up, and we see the bottom of clouds.
Right. Yeah.
And so we can combine these two different perspectives to give us a more complete picture of clouds.
I never thought of that. Yeah, that's pretty ingenious. So do you see different things at the bottom versus the top?
Well, you're just seeing it from a different perspective, right? So if, for example, we walked outside and there were a whole bunch of low-level clouds, we wouldn't even see if there were clouds at higher altitudes than that because we would be completely covered by low-level clouds.
Okay, true. Yeah.
And from a satellite's perspective, it sees high-level clouds first. And so if it's completely covered by high-level clouds, a satellite might not detect what's going on below that level. So clouds can form at multiple altitudes in the troposphere. So there's low, middle, and high level clouds that form.
Okay.
And so if you think about low, middle, and high level clouds, if either the low or the high is blocking the rest of the vantage point, you miss a whole bunch of clouds.
That's true.
Right.
That's true.
Okay. So I'm getting a better picture of this globe program. I know we're going to continue talking about it. I have one question that kind of links what we're talking about now back to how you looked up as a kid. You figured out in high school, I really love clouds and I can study them as a thing. I think a lot of listeners and a lot of people in general probably think of clouds as, oh, we know all about those. I learned about those in my elementary yes. school science textbook. We know everything there is to know about clouds. Can you share a little bit more about what NASA, you, and all of us are still learning about them?
Yeah, so we are still learning about what types of clouds are where. When we look at the clouds, we might be looking up and we just say, oh, cloud, there it is.
Or dark cloud, I'm going to get my raincoat.
Right. So scientists care about the what we're going to call properties of the cloud. What are the characteristics of that cloud? In other words, use descriptive words to describe the cloud that you're looking at. That sort of will lead you to the types of questions or the properties that scientists are interested in. So, Jeff, you just mentioned dark, I think.
Jen just did.
Yes. Oh, Jen just mentioned dark clouds rolling overhead, right? Versus
white, puffy ones.
White, puffy cloud. Yeah, yeah. So, in fact, they're commonly referred to as fair weather cumulus, those singular puffy clouds that are known to be in conjunction with fair weather, right? But I think, Jen, you're suggesting that like a dark cloud might mean, ooh, there's storms or something, right?
Yes.
So that we sort of have learned, and that's exactly the type of thing, if you just keep going with that a little further, where scientists want to know, you know, what altitude is that cloud at to know about the temperature of the cloud. We also want to know how it, technical term, optically thick. How much light passes through a cloud?
So I had never heard that term.
No.
How optically thick? So what are the optical properties of the cloud? Does it let light through or does it block and reflect sunlight?
Right. Okay.
So if you were outside on a really hot day, maybe you're going to the beach, maybe you got a soccer game, who knows? And it's super hot outside and you're just really hoping that a big puffy cloud rolls overhead and light, right?
Yes.
So that's one type of cloud, and its properties are to reflect sunlight back to space for the most part.
Okay.
But there are other clouds, like high clouds are typically thin.
Right.
They're actually made up of ice crystals because they're so cold. That type of cloud lets most of sun's energy pass right through it.
Gotcha.
So they're actually not reflecting much of the sunlight. And those clouds tend to have a warming effect overall on our planet because they let the sunlight through and then they trap heat, Earth's heat, from escaping back into space.
Right.
So not our clouds are equal in terms of how they wind up heating or cooling the planet.
Oh, so is that one of the reasons why cloud watching is helpful for science? Is because then you can see its effect on climate change and the Earth's
absolutely
temperature?
Yeah. So we're trying to understand what the clouds are at different locations.
Okay.
If and how they're changing. And then scientists are trying to figure out, okay, so if this type of cloud is more prevalent, is that going to lead to more heating or more cooling in our environment?
Okay.
And to do that, we need a lot of data on clouds to be able to start to do things like that.
Right.
And so that's where ground-based observations are really helpful.
Okay. So in thinking of the different layers of clouds with the ground-based data, is there a way of telling when you're a ground-based observer which ones are the low level? And I think that medium might be even harder to figure out than the high. Are there ways that just anybody can look up and say, oh, these types of clouds only form in this layer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we've got an app for that.
There you go.
I should have known as soon as I finished the lesson.
Yeah, so we have an app called Globe Observer. That's a free app for iOS and Android devices. And built within the app are these tools to help you identify your cloud types. So have you ever heard of a dichotomous key?
Yes.
Right. That's the whole point of a dichotomous key. Yes or no type questions.
Yes.
And in fact, built into the app, we have some of that where we can kind of look at different pictures of clouds and it'll say like, all right, so is the cloud that you're looking at puffy? Yes mm-hmm. or no? Or is it flat and covers most of the sky? Yes or no? So okay. those are some of the ways that it helps you step through that. But I also have a few tips if you're interested in.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of like figuring out the difference between low, yes. middle, and high clouds.
Definitely. Exactly.
Yes.
All right. So let's think about the ones that are most people's favorite. Cumulus clouds are the puffy ones.
Yes.
Sure.
So they're the ones that often make nice, fun shapes in the sky.
Yes.
So we should never look directly at the sun. Safety first. Make sure yes, to never exactly. look directly at the sun. So if you're looking at the cloud and you hold your arm out to the cloud.
Okay.
And if each individual puff is about the size of your fist or larger, it's probably a low-level cumulus cloud.
Oh, okay.
Cool tip.
Yeah.
Now, and then it starts to get smaller, right? Because it's getting farther away and also it's a little smaller. So an alto or mid-level cloud, if you hold your arm out and you look at the individual puff, it's going to be about like 2 fingers worth or smaller.
Okay. Okay.
And then an individual puff in the high level, the CIRO acronym, cirrocumulus clouds, are going to be even smaller than that. They're going to be about 1 finger or smaller.
So what about the ones that are like really high, right? So ooh, yeah. does that mean one cloud is at different altitudes?
Ah, so in a cumulonimbus, so back to our amazing thunderstorm clouds that produce lightning that Jessica loves so much, those types of clouds, a cumulonimbus is really unique because it starts, its base is at the low level. But it okay. builds and gets so big that it actually builds and goes through the mid-level, up through the high level.
Wow.
And that okay. big anvil that you see,
right?
You know how it almost looks like that people sometimes describe it like a mushroom or an anvil?
Right, yes. exactly.
Well, some of that is happening because cumulus clouds are because of convection, this rising and seeking motion. And the okay. thunderstorm has outflow, so that's pushing it out. But it also hits the tropopause. They have gone as far as you can go.
Wow.
I love that. Yours. Oh,
that's yeah. really, well, that's really, really high. I didn't.
It's yeah. really, really high. Well, so they're an interesting cloud, too, from a climate perspective, because they do block sunlight, right? Because they're right. so big, they're reflecting right. light. But actually, the top of them is super cold. Because okay. they're at the tropopause.
Yeah, sure. that
so they
makes sense.
Have their own unique, interesting properties to them. Not all clouds are created equal.
No, and I never knew that the tropopause would have a physical effect on yeah. a cloud. It wouldn't just continue on into the stratosphere, the next layer of Earth's atmosphere, yeah. but the actual, that tropopause, that sort of area between the two, has a physical effect, and we can see that.
That's right.
That's yeah. really cool.
Yeah. So then you've also got your stratus type clouds, which are yeah. the ones that are more like blankety. We think of yes. them often as covering most of the sky.
Okay.
So tips on figuring out low, middle, or high versions of that are if you, again, not looking directly at the sun, but if you can not really even see the sun, with your more thicker stratus-like cloud, it's right. probably low level.
Oh.
Okay.
If you can figure out where the sun is, it's just kind of this dimly lit light.
Right.
Then it's an alto stratus.
Okay.
And then if you can really figure out where the sun is located, it's a cirrostratus. And oftentimes a cirrostratus has these really cool properties because those ice crystals get to do some fun things with the sunlight. You often get a halo around the sun or the moon. And so you can have a halo effect when you have a cirrostratus cloud.
Okay.
Wow.
So I have an interesting question in that the two of you are in Florida. I live in Colorado Springs, Colorado, right next to Pikes Peak, America's Mountain, which is just over 14,000 feet tall. So my, and I live on the slope, basically, of Pikes Peak coming out into town. My house is at 6,700 feet elevation. And wow. The mountains in between here, there's a small range in between here and Pikes Peak itself, go to about 9,000 feet. So 3,000 feet above me, wow. 5,000 below. There are mornings, and it's always only early in the morning. There are early mornings where there are clouds and not fog that are below the peaks of the mountains in our town that just sort of drift on through. And then as the sun comes up and warms up the atmosphere, then they go away. What are the lowest clouds can go?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, so in fact, we have a globe cloud chart on our website that is a really helpful tool for starting to look at clouds. And it has them divided by low, middle, and high level. So you can see where clouds might form. Where a cloud might form actually depends on the day. So in meteorology terms, this is called lifting condensation level.
Okay.
Right.
So when you take your meteorology class,
I was going to say we're getting sciencey now.
You find out that actually every day the atmosphere is slightly different, right? Because we have wind. Every day you go outside and it's slightly different. So what level the clouds can start forming at the base height today in your area might be different the next day. Or, okay. Jeff, kind of what you're alluding to, sometimes that's regionally dependent, right? So the clouds that Jen and I saw are probably different than the clouds that you're used to seeing in Colorado or people wherever they're located.
Right.
So, okay. So now that we're talking about clouds, so I've always wondered if you can explain exactly what causes fog. Is that related to clouds? Is that just low clouds or is that back to your, you know, moisture of the morning?
Yeah. So fog is created slightly differently, but you can absolutely think of it as a cloud that is touching the ground. Oh. So for fun, I'll tell you that. So got to go on a family trip to Asheville. So talking about mountains, right? So
beautiful,
I'm from Florida.
Yes.
I don't know anything about mountains. You know, we've got like hills that are actually very, very small hills.
Yes. Mostly so we flat. Got,
it's mostly flat in Florida. I don't really know much about mountains. And so the times that I've gotten to go into the mountains has been really, really fun to see, Jeff, like what you're talking about, this phenomenon where the clouds are there, but you are actually sort of at the same altitude or higher than the cloud. But fog would be if it's actually touching the ground.
Right.
And my youngest daughter is turning 8. And she was real excited to be able to look and say, oh, that's a cloud. And so I got to ask her, okay, so what do you think a cloud feels like?
Yes.
Right? Okay. Before we get out of the car, what do you think a cloud feels like? What is it made of? So that's our little thought question here. What is a cloud made of?
It's wet, right?
It's wet. Yeah. So I mean, it's
cold.
It's water,
maybe
water is droplets.
Cold, I would think.
Well, I mean, if it's fog, it's going to be probably the same temperature, roughly the same temperature that you're at, right?
Okay.
But as a cloud gets higher and higher, the temperature decreases as you go up in the atmosphere, and so it gets colder. But oftentimes, I find that sometimes people aren't sure, and we have some misconceptions about what clouds are made up of. But clouds are made up of water droplets.
Yep.
So when you go outside and you touch the cloud, it feels wet because it's water droplets.
Yes. Right. Yes. It's very cool. So I have a question. So what do you see differently from the satellites looking down at a cloud?
Yeah. So we have lots of different instruments on satellites. And I kind of like to think of them as your senses, right? So you've got different senses.
Sure.
And some of those instruments are more like a camera. So think of it as like your sense of sight. It's just looking, right? So it probably sees a cloud as white.
Okay.
And you can probably see some texture. That's really where we can start to identify cloud types is looking at that texture. Remember, I was saying that scientists care about the properties. How would you describe that cloud?
Right.
And so from a satellite image, you can tell what that cloud type is by looking at those characteristics, the texture that you see in the image. We also have instruments that are more like a thermometer. So you like your sense of touch. And it's going to tell you about the temperature of the cloud.
Ah, okay.
Now, I do have to share one challenge that sometimes satellites face. So let's think about clouds and think about snow.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So like on the ground, we know whether or not there's snow on the ground, right?
Yeah,
if sure. You can imagine floating out in space, looking down at Earth. If all you had was your sense of sight and your sense of touch from a temperature perspective, well, clouds and snow would look an awful lot alike.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Right. So
yes, they would.
So snow's white.
White, fluffy,
snow's
cold.
Yeah.
So that's actually a feature that can be kind of tricky to determine in different satellite images. That's an example where obviously we on the ground have no problem determining whether or not if where we are is snow covered or cloud covered.
No, it's not a cloud. Sorry.
I like to share that example because even though we have other instruments to try to help us tease apart the difference between snow and cloud, and we can look at, you know, satellite images over time to see, oh, was there movement, right? Because most of the snow is, it's not moving, right? That's going to be
Static.
So, so that's one way to do that. But it's just a really clear example of recognizing that there is value from different perspectives. There are strengths and weaknesses with each type of instruments that's used, and there's strengths and weaknesses depending on where you're looking at something.
Right.
And being on the ground, it is an example of your strength is you can clearly determine the difference between cloud and snow.
Yes.
Okay. So broadening this conversation just a little bit more, we're still learning about clouds, and we talked a little bit about the difference between climate and weather. What are you, what is NASA, what is science hoping to learn from clouds in the next 10, 50, 100 years that may help us with what's happening with the Earth?
Yeah, so it's exactly that, the role that clouds play in climate. And so when we talk about climate or in science, we often are talking about something referred to as feedback. So, but feedback in the science way means, does it wind up increasing the thing that you're looking at, or does it wind up decreasing the thing that you're looking at? So in other words, are these certain types of clouds positive in terms of increasing that, or negative in terms of decreasing? So positive and negative here isn't to say that one's a good or bad. It just means, is it increasing or decreasing? And clouds, as well as aerosols, aerosols are these like little particles in the sky, super, super small. That's the area that climate scientists are hoping to better understand, because that's the area that we have the greatest uncertainty in what we call climate models, our projections of what climate's like.
Okay.
And so that's the area that we need to better study and understand what's happening.
Cool.
And really, what's cool about that is that it's not cool that we don't fully understand it yet, but it's cool to think that scientists around the world are actively researching this, and that you at home can participate in contributing data to help better understand this.
Yeah. Can you tell our listeners how they can do that specifically?
Yeah. So NASA is a sponsor of a program called the GLOBE Program, and it receives support from National Science Foundation, NOAA, and the Department of State. It's been around for over 25 years and is kind of the ultimate in citizen science programs, where students, teachers, the general public can all actively participate in contributing their own local environmental science data, but with the goal of helping us better understand regionally and globally, which is just really cool and very powerful. So there's over 125 countries that participate in this.
Wow.
Yeah. So the data that you're collecting in your backyard, you follow the same steps and procedures as somebody on the other side of the world. And so we know that we can compare and use that data together.
Exactly.
But also this means that you are joining a very large community of over 150,000 citizen scientists all collecting data. In fact, we have data from every single continent.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, that there is cloud data from every single continent.
That's really cool.
That's a really cool part of the program is that you're joining this community, but you're getting to be a scientist. You are collecting data and adding that to the database. And so families can do that together. They can download the Globe Observer app and make those observations together. And there's also a bunch of resources on the website to help with that as well.
This sounds so cool in that, A, just like you were saying, anybody can do it anywhere. But this really changes the level of any type of cloud or atmospheric lesson that anybody's learning, whether it's in elementary school, high school, the girl or boy scouts, or just with a fun mom and dad. This changes the level of experience in what they're getting, rather than just learning and being able to spell cumulonimbus, even though Jeff can't say it right now. This is a game changer in how we learn about things.
It's
sounds
active.
Really cool.
It's authentic. Yes. In that this is what scientists do. And what's really cool, I haven't even told you the coolest part. Here at NASA Langley, I know there's more. At NASA Langley, we receive all of that globe data on clouds.
Right.
And we check to see if there is satellite data from the same time and location from where you took your observation. So we're checking satellites in space. And if there was a satellite at the same time, we will email you the satellite data and your ground observation.
That's fantastic.
I'm going to get on this app now. You're going to get stuff from Jeff and Jen.
You just want to keep getting those NASA emails. I know, because it's super cool. We will personalize it to your location. You can see the satellite image. So all of those questions you just asked me about, you know, how does the satellite see versus what you saw?
Yeah.
Yes.
You will be able to see in this email this comparison of these vantage points.
Yeah, we're going to have to do this. This sounds like so much fun.
Solve it for kids is getting data from a satellite. That's happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so I don't know if that was your challenge, or do you happen to have another challenge for our listeners?
Well, Jessica? I just challenge you to make observations of the sky. And the reason I call that a challenge too is because sometimes we're nervous about our observations. Sometimes we think, I don't know if it's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But there's no one thing that can tell us if it's right. You know, even satellites, the reason we have multiple satellites and multiple instruments in space is because they're each telling us something a little bit different, right?
Yes,
like we were talking about, they all have their strengths and their weaknesses.
Yes.
And your data is another data point. And the more you observe, the better at it you will get. So don't feel nervous about, I don't know if this is the right answer. I encourage you to just give it a try. Do your best to, you know, check what types of clouds, what percentage the sky is covered, and send that data. That's what crowdsourcing is all about. The more of that data we get, the better we're going to be able to use it for our own statistics and evaluation.
Absolutely. I love it. This sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. This has been a fabulous episode. Thank you so much for being on Solve It for Kids, Jessica.
Thanks so much. I hope to see you submitting your data soon.
Oh, we will. We'll be in there.
Wasn't that a fascinating episode? We all see clouds every day, and you know all of us are looking for shapes in those clouds, and we are looking to tell the weather, and, you know, we live in different places, Colorado and Florida, and I can tell what my clouds are bringing me in Colorado. I'm sure you can in Florida. What did you think of that episode, Jen?
I thought it was so much fun. Because, you know, I've always looked at clouds, especially in Florida. You know, for me, and I related to what Jessica was saying, because I love some thunderstorms. And I love watching hurricanes. Not like being in dangerous hurricanes, but watching them and the rain and the thunder and the lightning. And watching the clouds roll in, especially off the ocean.
Absolutely.
It's incredible. And now she just added science to it, which makes it even more fun.
Absolutely. So now when we go outside and we are looking at those clouds, we are going to be having some of these thoughts and lessons that Jessica just shared with us.
I hope so.
And then hopefully us and our listeners will be learning just a little bit more, because we didn't even get a chance to talk about all of the different types of clouds, what they mean,
right.
And now we all know that clouds have more of an effect on our climate,
yes,
not just our day-to-day weather, whether or not we need that umbrella.
Yes, exactly. And I think the challenge is really amazing. And one of the reasons why I like it so much is there's no right or wrong. Just look up and draw or observe or write down or talk about what you see. And if you say it looks like a big puffy cloud, that's okay. You know, you don't have to get the name right. You just have to see if you can see that maybe the different layers she was talking about, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And how a puffy cloud may turn into one of those long, stringy, wispy clouds. Absolutely. And this app that you can use, the Globe Observer app, that you can take photos of the clouds from ground level, and then NASA uses our data.
Yep.
Did you guys hear that? NASA uses our data.
That's fabulous.
Photos that we take, and they match them with satellite imagery from above the clouds to gain more information. And mind blown right here, Jen, if NASA has a satellite that goes over Colorado Springs the same day that I took a picture from the ground on Colorado Springs, they're going to email me that satellite photo. What a cool challenge. Let's get to doing this.
Yeah, I definitely want to do that. I think that would be really amazing, because I also think satellites are way cool. So when you combine them with everything else. So if any of you guys do this, we would love to see your photos. So make sure you tag us on our social media. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And be sure to check out our website, solveforkids.com, for this episode, because we will have all of the information about the Globe app and Jessica and everything that she does with us. Don't miss it.
We now officially have a scientific reason from Jessica and NASA to keep looking up.
There you go.
Until our next episode, this is Jeff and Jen on Solve It for Kids.